The debate on jail versus bail, what the Supreme Court has said in just the last couple of days, and the reality on the ground, not just at the level of the Supreme Court, but indeed at courts across the country, on circumstances in which bail hearings come up, which hearings come up first, and when bail is given or when it's not given. Why do we believe that this is an important topic to pursue? It is just in light of what the Supreme Court has said. The court has said very clearly just a few days back in connection with the Arnab Goswami case, but the statements are important. If we don't interfere in this case today, we will walk on a path of destruction. If left to me, I won't watch the channel, and you may differ in ideology, but constitutional courts will have to protect such freedoms. That particular remark was focused on, linked to the bail plea, which had actually come up. Well, joining us now on this larger issue of jail versus bail, and when should bail applications be considered, and whether it's all being done in an equitable fashion, Satish Manishinde, the senior counsel, senior advocate, who's also been a counsel for Riya Chakravarti, who's been in the news lately, Rajiv Nair, the senior advocate, Deshratan Nigam, political analyst and a Supreme Court lawyer himself, and Wills Matthew, the advocate of the journalist over here, Siddiq Kappan. He's the advocate for the Kerala Union of Working Journalists. In fact, Wills Matthew, let me come to you first. There are a lot of people who say, and this is common sense, that every case is different, and that in as much as bail should be the way forward, there are circumstances and people shouldn't be granted bail. In the case of your client, there are very serious allegations against him, of perhaps him wanting to travel to Hathras to stir up a situation over there in a very tense situation. How would you respond to this court allegation?
Well, let he be the most wanted criminal, even then, there is a procedure established by law. I'm coming to the guidelines of the Honorable Supreme Court in D.K. Basu versus State of West Bengal. That was not complained in this case. Now, it is the 40th day. He could not talk to his wife, and myself went to the subjudicial CJM court of Madura and the Madura jail for the purpose of meeting him. That was also rejected. Where is the rule of law? The procedure established by the law. Now, coming to as far as this case is concerned, it is a fact that he is a journalist. When it comes to journalists, we cannot draw borders in between, because he has to, the journalist, whether he or she, has to travel in all kinds of places. Say, take the case of Nakiran. He met Veerappan in the forest. Whether he can be arrested, saying that he is a part of the team of the Veerappan, or it is a case of, say, drug mafia. If any journalist straightforward asks, from where I can get drugs, who are the persons involved, whether a journalist can get it, the answer is no. He has to. So my most respectable point is this, actually. Whenever a journalist is arrested on any accusation, there should be benefit of doubt or presumption of innocence unless something substantial is there.
So that I understand, Mr. Matthews, what you're suggesting is, looking back at the history of your client and the allegations that he's part of the Popular Front of India, what you are suggesting is that he has known people who've been part of the Popular Front of India, which as a journalist, you are expected to know anybody. Knowing somebody doesn't mean that you're up to wrongdoing. That's what you're saying, right?
But a Popular Front is not a banned organization, number one.
Correct.
If it is a banned organization, of course. But in this case, if you have a close look at the FIR, what is stated is this, based on newspaper reports. My point is this, whether a person can be implicated in a case of UAPA, based on some newspaper reports.
All right. We'll come to the larger case in a moment from now. Mr. Nair, let me come to you. What the Supreme Court today did say is we are discouraging Article 32 petitions, to which Kapil Sibal, who was arguing, said that the court had interfered earlier and these are exceptional circumstances. So when the court is saying we are discouraging Article 32 petitions, does it in fact in a sense, go against what the court was saying earlier on in the Arnab Goswami case when it was championing liberties and freedom.
Vishnu, one thing we must be clear about, that the Supreme Court in Arnab was hearing a specially petition against the Bombay High Court declining bail. So it wasn't a 32 petition. But having said that, the parameters of 32 and 226, that's 226 is for high courts, is obviously now an expanded field following Arnab's judgment.
Right.
Now, we don't have the detailed reasons, but I must point out, I must add two more things which the bench said, speaking during the course of the hearing. Justice Chandrachud said, we are deeply concerned about liberty. If we don't preserve human liberty, then who will? And then he said, this is the ultimate reason for the existence of our constitutional courts. So although it was not a 32 petition, but Justice Chandrachud was mindful of the fact that the Supreme Court, as the last court, was interfering and actually said that we are going to now lay down parameters for high courts in the sense that bail and not jail should be the norm. This is a very significant thing because it can't be a one-off thing now confined to Arnab. But it suggests that the Supreme Court has expanded the field of personal liberty, and we hope that a long list of people, which I'll just share, Varivar Rao, Sudha Bhardwaj, Stan Swamy, all will get the benefit of Arnab's decision in some way or the other. I don't know whether they'll get in the Supreme Court or in the High Court, but certainly personal liberty doctrine has been expanded by the Supreme Court.
Mr. Manishande, is it a concern that while the doctrine has been expanded on the basis of what the Supreme Court has said, it's not been institutionalized? Is there a process by which this needs to be institutionalized for lower courts, for example, to have a clear line on when bail needs to be granted, something which used to exist but has now been forgotten?
Well, if you look at all the pronouncements of the Supreme Court, right from 1976 when Article 32 was brought into play, there has been a inconsistent rendering of justice from various benches, in spite of the fact that a number of judgments have laid down as to the scope of Article 32 and Article 136 and 142. So it's very confusing for a trial court lawyer or a litigant who is located far away and arrested, that somebody like Arnab Goswami, who had the wherewithal to move the Supreme Court with the lightning speed, he gets justice last week. And a journalist from Kerala and one more person from Gujarat who was arrested for bailable offenses according to the petition filed in the Supreme Court. He is being sent back to the High Court. So the Supreme Court should come to some understanding within amongst itself that the conflicting judgments that are being rendered week after week, judgment after judgment, case after case, is not giving the best picture of the Supreme Court to a common man and a common litigant, and particularly to the trial court lawyers who day in and day out encounter these cases. If you see half the number of accused who are in jail, languishing, awaiting for trial, they are for offenses less than 10 years. Some of them can't even afford the bail amount. They're languishing in custody. Instead of taking up such cases, all of a sudden to take up the case of a well-known journalist who was backed by a battery of lawyers and giving him justice is welcome. The principles of law are equal to all, but the same kind of justice delivery system should be utilized to a common man and a poor lawyer who could not afford a lawyer. The Kerala Union of Journalists had to take up his case.
Okay.
So if such is the rendering of justice, which is so confusing within the period of 5 days, it leaves a bad taste in the mouth of most of us, and particularly all of those who are fighting for human rights. In fact, when the Supreme Court granted bail to Arnab Goswami, I was under the impression that the reasoning will follow immediately, so that a large number of us, particularly who are fighting for human rights and, you know, rights of the accused, we get a chance to court that judgment. But within a few days, a larger bench of the Supreme Court, headed by the Chief Justice, tells us that we are discouraging use of Article 32. Then why do we have Article 32 in our Constitution?
Right. Right.
It just feels a bad taste.
Right. I want to go across to Deshratha Nigam. Sir, when the Unlawful Activities Prevention Act is invoked, it appears, and there are so many examples of this, that even the aged, the infirm, are unable to get bail for whatever the reasons are. In light of what the Supreme Court has said, do you believe there needs to be a relook, not just at the case of Siddiq Kapan, but also in the case of Varavara Rao, in the case of Father Stan Swamy? You know, one of the arguments, sir, which was raised, and now he is being given medical treatment, but Indira Jaisingh was arguing for Varavara Rao, and she told the court, he is bedridden, he is on diapers, he cannot control urination, he is with a urine bag, his catheter has not been removed. Is this man going to flee away from justice? It appears to be fairly commonsensical. This being the case, how do you look at the entire issue of bail versus jail? Deshratha Nigam, sir.
Vishnu, I will not comment on individual cases, but I will talk on general principles. Bail is a discretionary power of the court and depends on facts and circumstances of each case. You cannot compare with Arnab Goswami's case, because Arnab Goswami's case was already closed and then reopened without the permission of the court. And there the trial court had clearly said there is nothing on record to show any linkage of the offense which has been alleged to have been committed with Mr. Arnab Goswami. That was the observation of the trial court. Now look at the observation of the trial court in Kappan's case, where the court very clearly said there are very serious charges when three accused persons had gone for bail. As a strategy, as a lawyer, we also file test bails, you know, before coming to the main accused, just to test whether the court will grant or not grant. So therefore, these are two very different things. And as Mr. Nair pointed out, that it was a special leave petition against the Bombay High Court order. So he had already approached the Bombay High Court and came to due process of law, feeling aggrieved, he came into the Supreme Court. Now in the matter of Kappan, he has not even approached any court, despite the CJI's observation on 12th October that you should approach the High Court. He has not done so. He has not even approached the trial court also, district court also. So he's not even exercised his right that he has. And therefore, the two cases cannot be compared. If he is able to establish mala fide on behalf of UP government, I will be on his side. But let him come forward. And that is why the Supreme Court wanted to hear the UP government before, you know, passing any orders. So, and under UAPA, these are very stringent charges where now the accused has to prove his innocence rather than the prosecution proving the guilt of a person. These are special provisions to deal with the menace of terrorism, terrorist funding and terrorist organizations. Therefore, again, this cannot be compared with Arnab Goswami's case. So these two are very, very different cases, and let Kappan, you know, exercise his right to the court. And then one can understand straight away 32. I can understand he is aggrieved. But should he have not moved his the trial
okay,
court?
Okay, so I will. In fact, that's my last question to Mr. Matthews. Very briefly, sir. Have you, I think the point mentioned by Deshratha Nigam is, besides anything else, procedurally, you've set yourself up for the situation you find yourself in today, where the court wants another party to be heard and has asked questions about whether you have, you've moved the right courts and you followed the procedure before coming to them. Have you done that?
Yes. In this case, the order was passed on 12th of October. Supreme Court granted liberty to amend the writ petition and to approach the High Court of Allahabad. That is correct, actually. Subsequently, on 16th, I filed an application for meeting the accused before the CJM. On their directions, I approached the jail authorities, but the jail authorities specifically stated that without an order from CJM court, they cannot permit me to see the accused. Then the only, because just for taking any legal action, the primary requirement is to meet the client. Without that, we cannot move any kind of applications. We have done our level best, And we filed it around 12:45. I was keep on waiting, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. At 6:20, I was shown an order stating that my application is rejected. Without meeting the client, how we can approach any courts of law? Well, that is the reason first itself I made a statement to the effect that it is the fundamentals of rule of law. It is the fundamentals of the procedure established by law. The right of a client to meet his lawyer, that is denied. That is the reason Leonard Senior Counsel Sri Kapil Sibal ji informed the court that this is an extraordinary case. There exists extraordinary circumstances. Being so, Article 32 read with Article 142, the Supreme Court is having all the powers.
Okay.
That is our case,
all right,
actually.
All right. Okay, I take Mr. Nigam, 30 seconds. I need to end this. Yes.
Yes, yes. You know, Vishnu, the fact is...
Okay, sir. Okay.
Resuming that what Mr. Matthews is saying is correct, that his application was rejected on 16th October and today is 16th of November. So in the meantime, he has not taken any steps to challenge that order, to approach High Court or otherwise. So, and he waited till the next hearing to come. This shows some kind of a strategy on the parts of lawyers. And lawyers do, I'm not blaming the lawyers, lawyers do employ such kind of a strategy.
Okay.
Therefore, 1 month's delay without taking any recourse to the order of the CGM, which needs to be challenged, it has not been done so. Therefore, there appears to be some kind of a strategy.
All right, Mr. Nair, go ahead, sir. Yes.
One thing. We are not on individual cases. What I want to say, when the Supreme Court has opened the window in Arnab Goswami's case, it can't be shut for others to follow.
Okay.
The principle has been laid.
The principle of justice has to be there for all. I think that's
uniformly applied.
All right. Look, I'm out of time, Mr. Manishinde. You'll have to excuse. You want to say something? Go ahead, sir. Mr. Manishinde, yes. Quickly, sir.
Whatever is the nomenclature of the petition or the article of the Constitution utilized for a matter, ultimately a person is going before the Supreme Court that he's languishing in custody with all these reasons, whether it is Unlawful Activities Act or otherwise, you will have to see what are the offenses disclosed. Other than that, the Supreme Court has to see that is it something which requires custody of the person? Where is the question of formalities of going back to the High Court? If a constitutional court has been approached, why do you want to send me back to another constitutional court?
Okay.
Where there's going to be another long queue of matters. Why do you want to overburden the courts?
All right. Okay. I just want to wrap this up now because we will certainly look at the specifics of this court, but the purpose of this debate was actually to look at the larger issue, which we've also done at length. The law has to be applied equally and fairly. Is that really being done in the way that we would like it to? I'd like to thank you all very much for joining us.